Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On The Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Welcome to Hump Day, everybody. We made it to another Wednesday. We want to thank God for another chance of being here, another day of life to sit and gather and talk about things. Okay, you know how we start this off. Our shout-outs to Mr. Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 Kiss FM Radio in New York City, currently with isolradio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m. and on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. And you know, when he's not spinning the magic on the radio, he's out here in New York giving you the best of the R&B events that is out there in the most wonderful of venues with the greatest of music, and it's just fabulous. So he is the CEO of Track One Entertainment, bringing you those R&B events. Keep on looking out on Facebook for when he announces his next event. We just did a great one with DJ Felix Hernandez and the Rhythm Review over at Roseland, and it was awesome. So you guys, don't miss your chance to be a part of it. Whenever you see him posting, contact him immediately because tickets do so fast at his events. Now, I want to thank Stephanie Hammond-Tillette and Marcia Morgan of Simply Sensational, Inc. They've been reaching out and helping us get community outreach and reaching out to people on some important issues. And my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, and Monster Miles, also on the mission with me out there doing their parts in their part of town. We have come up tonight with a topic that we know you've heard before, but in our recent visits out into the community and interactions, this one came up and touched us enough for us to actually speak about it, because this affects all ages. And tonight's topic is staying committed to the pain. Why do victims of abuse stay in the abusive relationships? Now, I've heard some interesting opinions of people who are actually not in abusive relationships and they're on the outside looking in. And I've heard some judgmental people. I've heard some people who really just speaking based on speculation and they weren't trying to be mean. But I've heard some very interesting viewpoints. I want to thank the Real World Black News and Discussions Group because they have been nonstop feedbacking to my pre-broadcast topic question. I want to thank Dolores Milligan, Joyce Moss, Rod Russ, quite a few other people on my Facebook network. I want to thank those tweeters, the iPodcasters, and all my teens and my local people out in the neighborhood for taking the time out to answer my question. And I want to thank a special person out here in Springfield Gardens, New York, and his name is Abdul Dixon. He's known as Roll Up. He's a wonderful guy, and he's been very much actively giving me feedback on what he thinks of the topic. So thank you, Abdul, if you're out there listening. Now, we are going to go to break, and when we get back, we are going to start talking about why is it that these victims stay? Why do they stay? You'll be surprised at some of the things that people think are the obvious reasons are definitely the obvious reasons, but there's a whole lot more to it. And when we get back, we'll get started. So see you in 4 minutes. Here's Aluminum with That's Not My Name.
That's not my name. Don't think that's easy, honey.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett, and that was those three wonderful young ladies, which I predict are going to be the next hottest R&B group sensation. They are called Aluminum. These are three young, wonderful girls with nothing but positivity. They are spreading the word of Christianity and positivity, self-respect, motivation among the kids their age. They're very good. And they have a wonderful family structure, including their father slash manager, who, you know, allows them to be creative. They were here live in the flesh a couple of weeks ago on our Saturday showcase, telling us from their own words what exactly it is that they believe in, what their music means to them, and what they're trying to do with it as a community give back. So I'm very proud to be a part of them and to do what I can for them. And they're just amazing young ladies. So tonight's topic, staying committed to the pain. Okay, well, let's begin. You're in a relationship. It may have started out, you know, with roses and star flowers and, you know, glitter and beauty and everything. But somewhere down the line, things started to get really bad. And now it's nothing but verbal abuse or physical abuse or sexual abuse, mental abuse, all of these things. And it's been going on for some time now. It's been years even. Now there's children involved. Or maybe no children, just a very long time together. And you're miserable, but you're always trying to make it work, or at least one of you are. Why not just leave? Why not just leave? Seems like the simple thing to do, right? Okay. For those of you that are new listeners, one of the things that has allowed us to become a part of this show or to have created this show was because each of my co-hosts and myself have a mission or a story that motivated us to want to do something for someone else. And one of the things that we did, one of the things that I should say is a motivation for at least one of us, is that we are survivors of abuse, domestic abuse, rape, incest, and we've been in the streets homeless, things to that effect. So each of us are in that. Now, as your main host, I am a victim, a survivor of domestic abuse. So when I brought up this topic and I listened to the people that I interviewed today and the feedback that was given back and everything, I realized that a lot of the speculations or the opinions or the guessing as to why victims stay in their situation is very typical, very common, and very true to a point, but it's so much more to it. And I was very appreciative of the fact that a lot of people didn't say that the person is stupid or the person, you know, just doesn't want to be out of the situation, because that's so far from the truth that it's sickening. So let's talk about what everybody believes is the reason and what is all over the top 10 situations and all of these expert opinions. Well, let's go with emotional. Emotional reasons for staying. Belief that the abusive partner will change because of his or her remorse or promises to stop battering. Meaning that the abuser, when he realizes that the person is planning to leave, they'll start crying, getting remorseful, promising that they'll do better, they won't hit, they didn't mean to, and they'll stay because the victim will stay because the person that they fell in love with seems like it's still there and all hope isn't gone. And I'm going to, very important point to touch on, because there's more to that. Fear that the abuser will threaten to kill the victim if abuse is reported to anyone. Very common. And fear is a definite one, because there's been abusers that have said, if you leave, I'll kill you, or I'll kill your dog, or I'll tell you, I'll get your family, or your child, or I'll do this and that. But there's another type of fear, the ones where no matter where you go, you don't seem to get any help to get out of the situation. You run away, that person finds you. Look at the story of Tracy Thurman. She ran to cops. She did everything she could. That domestic abuse wasn't considered a really big crime at some point. Matter of fact, depending on what type of policeman you got, some men used to think that if it was a man beating his wife, it was domestic issues that had nothing to do with the police. Look at the burning bed where, you know, those of you that are about as old as me or up, the burning bed with Farrah Fawcett. That was the story of a true story about a woman that burned her husband in bed because he was beating the hell out of her. And nobody would help. His parents condoned his behavior, just gave him a little talking to. So there's a lot more involved with the fear factor. So that's 2 points that needs to be expounded on. Insecurity about living alone. Oh, that's a big one. That's a big one. Okay, insecurity about living alone. Then there's fear of making major life changes. Change scares everyone. If you're an abuse victim, it scares you twice as much. Feeling responsible for the abuse, oh yes, oh yes. That's a definite. You feel responsible somehow that the person who is abusing you, you are actually the reason for that to happen because they used to be such a great person. Feeling helpless, hopeless, and trapped. That goes back to what I said earlier about the fear factor. Nobody wants to help. Nobody is listening. Nobody can do anything. And belief that he or she is the only one who can help the abuser with his or her problems. That's a definite, too. You start taking it all on yourself. So those are just under the emotional category. Now let's look at situational stuff. Economic dependence on the abuser. Yes, he or she is in control of all the money, all the bills, the house, everything. Okay, fear of physical harm to themselves or to the children. That's a definite. Emotional damage, fear of emotional damage to the children who need two parents, even if one is abusive. That is definitely another one that goes more under emotional, I think. Fear of losing custody of the children because the abuser threatens to take the children if the victim tries to leave. That's a definite. Lack of occupational skills, that one may or may not be a factor. Or at least it's not a big one. Social isolation is lack of support because either the abuser is often the victim's only support system, or he or she will definitely try to scare away anyone else who tries to become one. Lack of information regarding community resources, belief that law enforcement will not take him or her seriously, lack of alternative housing, and cultural or religious constraints. Then there's the category that's specific to women. Women in particular can experience hesitant and contradictory feelings and thoughts about their abusive partner and the relationship. There are some common victim reactions toward the abuser's behavior and reactions that can keep the woman in the relationship. Feeling emotionally attached to the abuser, but also feels anger toward him, which she denies to herself. Is grateful to the abuser for small acts of kindness, oh yes, and tends to explain away his violence. She's very attentive to the abuser's needs and with the mistaken belief that she will be able to anticipate his needs and prevent the beatings. Belief that the abuser will change. Belief that he needs her and feels guilty about leaving him. May use alcohol or drugs to cope with the anxiety, the fear, or the depression, or justifies the violence and feels responsible for it. Those are definite. Now, for those of you that spoke about the Stockholm Syndrome, that sort of ties into almost all that was there. And you know something? The Stockholm Syndrome is definitely, I'm going to say, a big majority factor, but not simply because it's the only route or routine that the victim knows. Understand, especially if there's children involved, you start believing everything that your abuser tells you, especially if they are the ones that are holding the cards, especially if there used to be a person that was full of love and sweetness and, you know, you spend a lot of time being in shock, like not believing that this person could really be as mean as they as they are. Like, you're looking at them and you're going, no, there's got to be something. And you convince yourself, which that process could take years sometimes. Because no matter how hard the hits are, or how nasty the words are, or how dismissive or cruel the actions are, you keep on thinking about what brought you there or how you began. And you can't believe that that person is this person. Then you spend another few months or so in your own head trying to curse yourself out for not seeing the obvious, but at the same time feeling bad because you don't want to remember. I mean, you don't want to believe of this person that this person is, it could be going through something and doesn't mean it. But at the same time, you're looking at the bruises on your face and the heartbreak that you feel, and you're going, I didn't do anything to deserve this. But at the same time, you're wondering, what could you have done better? Because that's what abuse does to you. Abuse makes you think that you are responsible. Abuse makes you think that it's something you did. Oh, you know what? He's the only one working. So you start feeling bad as a woman for not working but raising the children and forgetting the fact that his one little 9-to-5 job ends at 5. Yours doesn't. And then when he comes home, he's an additional job because you got to take care of him too. So you start feeling guilty about doing something that no one person should have to do alone. And you start finding ways to excuse why this man who says he loves you, or this woman who says she loves you, would pick up their fist or call you names or curse you out or kick you out or cheat. So you start thinking there's a way that you could fix it. There's only something you could do. If only you could change the way you look. If only you could, say something different. Maybe if you don't get them mad too quickly. Another thing, no matter how hard or bad an abusive life is, if that's all you know, it's hard for you to just up and cut it short. You start thinking about ways that you could work around it until you can get on your feet, not realizing that that time to get on your feet may not come until you leave. Let's talk about the women that have left over and over again and gone to everybody who have shouted from the mountaintops that I am being beaten, that I can't go back, that this man did this to my neck, or this man did this, and the police are thinking, oh, well, handle your woman. And Lord knows, if I was told pretty much, let these niggers handle their own situation when the cops came into our home. So you're up against a lot of things when you reach out and you try to share your biggest shame, your biggest fear, your biggest whatever. There was a point in time when I remember I became such a great masseuse because I had to learn how to massage my own bruises and make myself well again after an attack because I had children to raise. And I couldn't afford to go down. So I learned how to put my own limbs and hurt and swellings back into therapy to make it work again. And it was always great. So after learning that, I suddenly now started becoming immune to it and thinking, oh, well, at least this one I can repair. But when I get away from this situation, when there was no money at one point after the work had to stop, when there was no way to go, now there was a certain amount of children involved, now nobody really wanted to be bothered with taking in you and your family. You start believing everything they say. Who's going to want you with all those kids? Oh, who's going to want you? Nobody loves you but me. Nobody will love you like I love you. Don't I do certain things for you? Who's going to do this for you, honey? No matter how bad it is, a victim that's deep in it, change is scary. Now, you just think about changing to a new job. Think about a new job, okay? You're used to being in the processing department, and suddenly your boss steps out and says, you're going to be the manager now. You're going to be out in the front, and you're responsible for not just your department, but you're responsible for bringing in new people, too. You know you can do it. But it's a whole new responsibility. You're going to be away from the people that used to make you feel comfortable when you came in there, that you could say hi to. Now you also got to deal with people being skeptical because you used to be one of them. Now you're their superior. You think about all of these things when you're going into a new position. So imagine what a woman or a man who is used to loving a person so long and was promised all these things. You'd never know a situation that goes on behind closed doors by the looks of things. Think about all the movies that you've seen about abuse out. Madea's family reunion. The most elite, perfect couple. And this man was beating the hell out of her, nearly threw her off a roof if she threatened to leave him. As I mentioned before, The Burning Bed, an old classic. The Tracy Thurman story. Do you think that all of these situations happen because these people wanted to be in it? They didn't know how to get out. And when there's people saying to you that all you got to do is go here, but then they require that you start telling all these things about your children, then they got to come in and investigate. You need help. You don't want people invading your life and going back to the abuser. Then they even told you, you have to go serve your abuser with an order of protection. But then an order of protection, what does that do? If he has a knife, that piece of paper is not going to protect you. It's not made of titanium or Teflon. Then you have to jump through hoops to keep up explaining why this happened. Then you got to prove that this happened to you. Then you got to get the looks as to why the hell didn't you leave the first time when people don't understand anything that you went through. When they ask why you stay, you can tell them, well, let me see. Last time I came to you people and I left and then y'all sent me back home, guess what? My head got stuffed into the side of a sofa couch. I have my first panelist in. I'm going to bring them in. Just give me a second. Welcome to the show, caller. You on the air?
Hello.
Hi.
I'm on the head being stuffed in the couch. What's going on?
Hi, Rod. How are you? Welcome.
All right.
Okay.
I should have got that man a beer.
I should have gotten him a beer. I should have gotten him a beer and did what with it? I was bringing up examples as to why, when people ask, why do victims stay? Mm-hmm. I got a lot of great feedback and a lot of very typical answers or what people think makes sense. And mm-hmm. all of it is true. None of it was off. But, mm-hmm. oh, hold on. I got to bring one more person in on the panel. Hang on.
All right.
Welcome, you on the air?
Hey, Katie. Lady Diamond. How are you?
Hi, Lady Diamond. Have you been listening? Because I know that you know what tonight's topic is about. I'm going to go to Rod first, and then I'm going to come back to you and ask your opinion. So, I was speaking, Rod, on the different examples of why some people won't leave or don't leave. Not that they won't, but they don't. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, I was saying was that people on the outside looking in, they don't know what goes on behind closed doors. They don't know what promises the abusers have made. They don't know the history between these two people where, you think you know your partner, and when they say mm-hmm. a certain thing a certain way, mm-hmm. there's another. When I see you call, I'll bring you right in. When they see a certain thing a certain way, you know, you'll be like, no, you guys don't know him or her like I know them. That look on their face means they're really serious. They really mean what they're saying. They really are sincere this time. And anytime you got to say this time, it's usually a bad situation. But mm-hmm. I was saying what you heard me say was when people ask, why didn't she leave? And I could say, well, next time you could answer something like, well, the last time I came to try to leave and I tried to ask you for help, I came back home and that person wound up putting my head in the side of a sofa couch. So, that's what I'm saying. Things like that. We have another panelist. I'm going to bring them in, but I got to go to Lady Diamond next. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, welcome, caller. Are you on the air?
Yes, good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Deacon. I got to go to Lady Diamond to expand our point, and I'm going to come back to you, okay?
No problem.
All right. Hi, Elaine. Your take on it. Why do you think abusers stay? Why do abuse victims stay with their abusers? I'm sorry.
Well, my point of view is fear. In my point of view, most of them are in fear of if they leave, will they follow them? If they stay, if they leave, will they follow them? Will they get worse? Because I've heard of most that they have escaped, and the abuser follows them. You know, wherever they go, they found them wherever they go. Whenever they try to move on to a new life or even relocate to another location, the abuser finds ways to find that person. Even I heard of one woman that my mother had told me about. It was a coworker, her ex-coworker's sister, and she has been constantly been abused. She's been beaten almost every day. Every time she cooks, it's the same thing. It was the same circle of life that she's been living with. She had two kids, and he would constantly beat her to the point that she was cooking and she snapped. She took her kids and disappeared. She vanished off thin air. Nobody, none of her family members knew what happened to her. You know, so I mean, it's just fear. To me, it's fear that if they leave, what will happen if that abuser finds out where they are right now?
Right. And I think that's the biggest of all. Maddie, even if they haven't left, fear of what could happen if they did. Because it's depending on the type of abuser as well. And what I mean is, some of them are just outright cruel, nasty, evil, will beat you down, will not care that it's a woman, if it's a man that's beating them. A woman that's so out of her mind with a temper rage, she'll pick up anything without thinking and just go at them and snap. So, yes, it's like you're afraid about what would happen if it's bad already. Deacon, let me ask you what your point is on this real quick.
Excuse me, please. Well, like Lady Diamond says, it's fear. It's not only just fear, but it's low self-esteem. And then you have some of these people that are being abused. They feel like it's something that they should stay in because they have been taught this because their parents before them were in abusive relationships, and they have been taught that this is an expression of love, which is a lie.
Yes, until
they get around some people that knows better than that, they tend to want to stay in the relationship because they figure that that's the way love is supposed to be. Love is not supposed to hurt, not physically anyway. You know, it can be hurtful, emotional, but that's another form of abuse. My take on it is the abuser has a problem also. The abuser is living in fear. The fear of someone finding out, or the fear that person is going to leave them. You know, so they figure, well, they can beat fear into them and lower their self-esteem, and they figure they bruise them up, then nobody else is going to want to look at them. They figure, well, they're not going anywhere. They're going to stay here and put up with it. But that's another lie. So my thing is that they have to let somebody know what's going on. A lot of these things are going on even today that are behind closed doors and people don't realize it. You see people coming out and dealing with things out in the world with a smile on their face, and they're living in a living hell. So I'm glad you're having this discussion this evening because I'm dealing with some stuff right now. I'm not being abused. So you don't have to worry about that, but it's a situation that's going on with my family right now that I'm trying to deal with. But I'm glad you guys had this topic out here this evening.
Thank you, sir. Panel, before we move on, I want to respond to an inbox message from a listener, and her name is Melissa. Apparently, she's going through, well, she says her name is Melissa, at least that's the name she asked me to use, and she's going through something similar, and she asked me to read a poem that I had posted earlier that I wrote, and she said she, hopefully, that the person that's in her life will get the message from it. So, okay, Melissa, if you're listening, I'm going to read it out. It's called I Wish, Letter from a Victim, and it says, I wish I knew why. I have to figure out this part. Why did you seek me out, pursue me, convince me to trust just to break my heart? Was there a sign on my head that said desperate or kick me? Did I invite you in and hand you the knife that you used to repeatedly stick me? And why did you use God as a front to secure a place in my life, only to fill it with grief, humiliation, and strife? What's missing in your life that makes you so desperate for control, that you make it your mission to break apart the one who loves you when they made it their mission to keep you whole? When did the light for me in your eyes become so darkened by hate? After promising me a great destiny, you sentenced me to a hellish fate. I gave you my heart as the wind to help you soar, and you fly over my head while you keep me crawling on the floor. I may never know why you picked me for your game, but I know that for me, love will never be the same. Melissa, I don't know what that was going to do for you, but I hope it does something. And I don't know, for you or for the relationship or whatever. But thank you for requesting it, and thank you for reading. I didn't know that anybody outside of my Facebook network was. Thank you very much. Okay, so Deacon, were you finished or were you going to continue to say something?
Well, the victims of this abuse find help. The abusers find help because you do need help.
Absolutely. Rod, you were saying something earlier. What is your take now?
You mentioned about why do they stay. I mean, there could be a whole bunch of reasons why they stay because, let's say, for instance, this is from the woman's point of view. Normally he's an easygoing guy, but let's say he has certain trigger buttons. Like, let's say, you know how the job outlook is? She
right.
may say something and send him, and that will turn him into a monster. And he'll grab her and start choking her, throwing her around. But other than that, he's not like that. Or it could be, you know, financial. That is, let's say he has all the money, all the education, and she has nothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so also it's like when she leaves, let's say she has a couple of kids by this guy. And a couple of years passed, and she's been hiding this secret from family, and now she can't take it anymore. She has a couple of broken ribs and such, and now when she said, I can't go to my family, I'll be embarrassed because they'll say, I was the smart one. She's like, why did I end up with such a guy? I mean, that's another reason why she probably can't leave. So, I mean, it could be much more, but that's just a couple.
And I will say there is a lot more, like the females are going through, you know, usually you hear of the abuse from females, but men go through it too. It's just that there's such a stupid code among men, and I'm sorry, but it's stupid, where you guys are forbidden from showing any type of sensitivity or feelings or, you know, absolutely stupid. That you can't share certain things that you could get help for or could feel better with. So you go over there trying to be, you know, big King Kong ape men to go out there and swing from a vine and show that you can do this when things like this require support. I don't care if you're a male, a female, a zebra. I don't care. You need support. You're a human being. That's what God made. If God said that men were supposed to do it by themselves, there wouldn't be women.
Uh-huh.
And that's just something that needs to be in people's head at all times. Teaching your sons that if you cry, you're a messed up person. You're gay. You're a sissy. You're this. Is what makes these kids grow up and feel that they have to express any type of hurt or fear by in a manly way, which means beating up on someone. Which makes no sense. But as far as victims staying with their abusers, that is definitely a big piece of it too. But the bottom line is, forget all the physical stuff at this moment. I'm talking about the physical situation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Because if the abuser was just about controlling with just physical things, trust me when I tell you, eventually these people wouldn't stay in it so long, because I will say this to you. It's what's inside that motivates people. It's what's inside that controls everything else. Because one thing about a woman, if you want to talk about that, a woman knows how to make things happen from nothing. So it was just money that this person was doing, and it wasn't about every other fear factor that he put in there, and mostly about herself. Mostly about the fact that if you leave me, you're going to go down. Nobody's going to want you. Nobody, you're stupid. Nobody's going to hire you. You're dumb. Nobody's going to take you in. That type of stuff is what they constantly control it. Believe me, the physical stuff, the hitting even, is not as bad as that. Because you can clean up a bruise with alcohol and put some A&D, and you remember what it came from, but it won't hurt like what that person said to you. Like the expression on their face when they looked at you like you were dirt and told you so. You know, so that's one of the things that really is the biggest control factor. Fear of change or starting over. Oh, my God. That is another debilitating factor. Where am I going to go with my children? Then you start thinking, oh, my God, I feel guilty for getting in this situation because now I'm a failure to my children. So I have to stand strong and take this stuff. And as long as they don't hurt the kids, I'm okay. But I'm being punished because I'm in this. I did this to myself. I should have saw this coming. I should never have let him take all the bills. I should never have let her be, you know, convince me to stay home and not work. You understand? These type of things is with the real control.
You know, that low self-esteem, and it's not just the woman. It could be from the guy as well. I'll give you an example I see every other day. This isn't just with the younger generation. It's, yeah. I'm sure the older do it. Like, I look out my window, and I see a real pretty girl. She's about 17, 18. She's walking up the street. Her boyfriend is 30 feet behind her, looking to her left, looking to her right. As long as she doesn't pass another man, he stays 30 feet behind her. However, as soon as another guy approaches within 5 feet of her, suddenly he runs right up to her, and he's right next to her, and he gives the other guy the evil eye, and the fight will probably ensue. And I scratch my head every time I see it. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? And so she has to put up with this. I wonder if folks have ever seen anything like that.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen that. And first of all, a guy has insecurity issues anyway that has to control where she goes, what she wears, how she's acting. The whole idea about love is to have a mutual trust with your relationship. The whole idea, and this is, I'm speaking this, listeners, not because I'm some psychological expert who's writing a book. I'm speaking this because I had to learn it. Okay, 21 years of being in abusive relationships between two different people, okay, and I'm speaking it. I know a lot of you are out there going, oh, 21 years, she was in it for 21 years. You don't know, so say nothing. And pray you never get in a situation where you have to learn the lesson firsthand. But it takes a lot from you. Now, I'm pretty intelligent. I'm not an idiot by no means, but when it comes to matters of the heart, your collegiate sense or your academics, it doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. Because very few people can be logistic and skeptical when they're in love. Matters of the heart makes you do stupid things. Okay? But when you start realizing that your heart has been broken a million times and that it's not coming back, now you start to become dependent on routine, dependent on what you feel is a sense of security, dependent on, you know what, it may not be the Ritz, but at least I have a home, but it's not a home, it's just really a house. You have to learn all of this for yourself even after you've gotten out of the relationship.
Yes.
We were about to say something. Yes, sir.
Yes. Oh, man. You made reference to the years of abuse that you had to deal with. A lot of times, situations don't have to take years. It can only take a few months. And I know that from, I lost my niece November 18th of 2012 because of an abusive relationship. She was only 19 years old, and her abuser was 18. She was going to school studying law. She was studying dance. She danced for 106 in Park. And on November the 18th of 2012, he shot her and killed her multiple times. They were only together for about 6 months. But she decided she wanted to break off the relationship. And she had broke up with him for about, I'd say about 2, maybe 3 weeks. But he kept calling her and harassing her and threatening her if she didn't meet him. So one day he really got to her. She was sitting, and she put his voice on the loudspeaker he was threatening her and telling her that if she didn't come where he was at, he was going to come and find her. So she was in fear of her friends and family members that somebody would get hurt. So she went to see him. She was shot and killed multiple times. It started in her car. She tried to get out of the car to get away from him and was running down the street. And as she was running, he was walking behind her, still shooting her with a 9mm.
Wow.
She got up on the porch and was banging on some people's door who sat inside their home and watched on monitors that they had on the outside of their house. And when he walked up on the porch behind her, after he shot her several times already, he shot her in the back of the head, and she went to the ground, and he continued to fire on her. Then the people opened up the door and come to find out these were his family members, and he drug her body inside the door. Then he came back and stood on the porch and shot himself in the leg and said that it was a drive-by, that somebody was retaliating on him for something else that he had did.
That guy's insane.
This monster had just killed somebody the month before, October the 18th of 2012.
Wow.
And then killed my niece. It doesn't take long for an abusive relationship to start. And
Nope. The
people that are in this, I hope you're listening to my voice and talk to somebody. Let somebody know. Family member, a close friend, anybody that you feel like you could sit down and talk to. Don't hold it in. Don't sit there and just keep taking it, because you might not see tomorrow. My niece didn't know that she was going to lose her life because she thought she was going to be able to talk some sense into this idiot. Two weeks ago, he was sentenced to a life without parole. Day for last.
I doubt if he's
so
going to make it to life.
Yeah, I'm so proud of my niece, her mother, that sat and looked at this guy in the courtroom and actually told him that she forgave him. I'm proud of her because I can't find it right now, and I know I'm a man of God. I can't forgive him right now, because right now the wound is still raw. I know I will eventually, but it's not right now because she and I were very close. And to make it so bad is that 2 days before he had killed her, we had a talk about him, and I had told her, I said, you know what, I told you from day one it was something about him I didn't like. I said, you be careful and watch yourself with him. Oh, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay, Uncle. I said, yeah, I know you are. I said, because God has got his hand on you. And then 2 days later, she was gone. But the best feeling I can get out of that situation, before he killed her, she went to church and got saved. So I really feel good about that, so I know where she is. But to anybody that's listening, don't stay in a relationship like that. It's not worth it. They don't love you, because if they love you, they wouldn't bruise you up and beat you up and kick you around. Or either verbal abuse. Don't even stay in a verbal abusive relationship. Get out. If it happens once, it's going to happen again. If it happens the second time, it's going to happen a third time. And so on and so forth. Get out.
Amen, Deacon, and that, I really wish that people would get it. I'm going back to a woman named Rebecca out in Montana. Yes, I do still have that other poem. I will read it after the break. Oh, you know what? Let me do it now, because I don't want to miss the opportunity if there's someone sitting with you that you want to hear this. Panel, at least two of you have heard this before when we did our teen segment. The poem is called I Love You to Death. For those of you who are still in a bad relationship, you don't know how to get out or what to do, I've been there, okay? I had a little bit more of an open mouth than the average victim, but I still didn't get any help. I still had to find it through myself. But for those of you who are still thinking that there's hope in this abuser, there's no hope until the abuser believes he's an abuser or she's an abuser and wants to get help for themselves. There's no amount of external love you can give them to fix them. You cannot fix them, okay? It's the same way with a person that's on drugs. You cannot fix them. They have to realize that there's a problem. So to you, Rebecca, and for your sister, Gina, here's a poem called I Love You to Death, written by me for awareness in domestic violence among teens. And we had a show segment with the same name. So I'm going to read this, and I pray that these words get to someone. It says, my God, this must be heaven, were the words that came to mind when I saw that look in your eyes when you looked at me as if I was the only person standing on the lunch line. If only I could make my parents understand, but they just don't want to see, that you could have anyone else in the world, and yet you want me. I know that the bruise on my arm looks real bad, but I know that you wouldn't have done that if I didn't somehow make you mad. My parents kept telling me that what we have isn't love, because if we did, there wouldn't be a harsh word exchanged between us, let alone a shove. But they weren't there when you said sorry, and they didn't see the way you cried. And if they had any sense at all, they would understand how conflicted you were inside. You went through so much just to get me back. You brought me flowers and apologized on your knees, as a matter of fact. And it was so much better for 3 weeks after we made up that I made a solemn vow to never let anything break us up. You have been by my side everywhere that I go, and you even get upset when I went somewhere and you didn't know. You see, I got your back. No one understands you like I do. I can even understand why my eye is now black and blue. What I don't understand is why my parents can't hear me. Why are they sobbing so loudly every time they come near me? And why am I lying flat on my back looking up at a massive crowd, a crowd of almost all my loved ones, and why are they crying so loud? I struggle to sit up, and I take a look around. I scream out, it's okay, everybody, I'm fine, but I can't make a sound. And finally it hits me as I catch sight of my name, carved out in a tombstone that reflected the love from whence it came. Real love captures your heart. The words I love you takes your breath. Real love never hurts you. Love that hurts equals death. And I pray that the words reach somebody today. I pray that those words reach whoever it is that you want it to be read to, because this is one of the biggest death rates is to domestic violence. It's somewhere up there with, you know, heart attacks and bullets. It's ridiculous the way that it is. Love is not supposed to hurt. Real love does not hurt. It doesn't destroy. And loving yourself may be a hard thing to do right now when somebody that you've trusted to be your partner, your wing, your support, is the first one telling you that you're worthless, or you're ugly, or your butt is too big, or you don't have enough chest, or you don't, you know, you're not muscular enough, you know, or you're too old, or you're too young, or you're not this. When they find something that bothers you, and they get a reaction, and they dig and dig and dig, and to the point where you become immune to it, because you have to force immunity upon yourself to survive the ordeal, because you're too afraid to leave or you're too skeptical about starting over. Let me tell you something. The biggest successes come by accident sometimes. You don't know what you're going to get when you get out there, and nothing beats failure but a try. But staying in a relationship where every day you go to sleep alone, you cry, you turn over, you know, this person likes something you can do for them, but it's not about you doing it for them, it's about the service. When you start to feel that you are the wife, but you act actually the other woman, or you're the husband, but you're actually the other man, when that person dresses up in his finest threads and best perfumes and colognes to go out to give it to another woman, and vice versa with a woman to a man, it's time to go, sweetheart. And I'm not saying this because it's easy, because believe me, it's not. But the love either never was there or has been long gone. When somebody who's in your life that you shared children with, that you shared intimacies with, that you have help their dreams and they turn around and feel that you're a nightmare, there's a problem. It doesn't matter what they're going through. They need to fix it. Because nothing is supposed to be fixed at the expense of you. And believe me, it took me years. I'm still sitting here just this year beginning to be able to take pictures and not find something wrong with myself. I am just now believing that what I see in the mirror isn't too bad. But I always knew that I was a good person. And the one person in my life that I loved very much was the one who made me start to doubt that. And that was when it became a problem. The day that you get to the point where you finally unleash that person as the handcuff on your leg or the chain, that's the day where everything is going to open up for you and life is going to seem new like you just lived it. But until then, you need to get yourself there. I need to take a break. When I come back, I'm going to address some points that were brought out in a so-called expert article, but there was also a periodical that was released by the Domestic Violence Association of America. I am a little touchy with this situation. I've seen too much around me as well as what I've gone through, too many people, and I take this one really seriously, because now our young people are starting to think it's a new fad to beat up on your girlfriends or to be beaten by your boyfriends, and it's very sad, very sad. I'm going to do a little bit of an uplift, and I want to pay a tribute to my friend Dolores Milligan, because she's absolutely awesome, but this was her group Sky with the classic Call Me. I'll be back in 4 minutes, so just bear with me, everyone. We'll be right back.
Now, back with more On The Edge.
Hi, welcome back, everybody, to the On The Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. That was Sky with Call Me. And we are in the middle of a great discussion with three of the greatest panelists that there is, and everybody knows them, and Ron's becoming a regular now. Lady Diamond, our co-host, Deacon Lady Williams, our community activist. And like I said, Rod is our soon-to-be regular newcomer. So is everyone back in on the panel?
Okay.
Rod, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. I used to love that song. Along with Bobby Jimmy and the Critters. The hair, the weave. Hair,
well,
the weave. Really your hair.
I figured I'd bring a little bit of a light spot here. And Deacon, are you with me?
Yes.
Hi there, Lady Diamond.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I was like, we always lose you out there somewhere. Okay, I want to share the advocacy centers, domestic violence and dating violence, like 10 facts. And one of the things that they brought up was low self-esteem, and that was kind of a common reply today to the pre-broadcast topic question. When abuser calls their partner names, puts them down and plays mind games, it can make the victim feel bad about themselves. Many times victims believe that the abuse is their fault or they deserve the abuse. That is absolutely true. Okay, but what a lot of people fail to realize is sometimes a person may have already had a little bit of a downer on themselves before the relationship started, and that abuser plays the savior to that particular downside of a person, where they'll say, "Oh, all those people who made you feel that way, they're the bad ones. You're beautiful. You're great. You're outstanding. You're this. You're that." But what happens is, then they turn it around later and use that as the very thing to control the person with. So the self-esteem becomes a whole different type at that point. Children, you were saying, I'm sorry. Okay, so someone said me. Children, it's a very common thing for a victim to stay with an abusive partner because they don't want to break up their family and are afraid that it might be hard on their children if they leave. Also, victims are afraid that the abuser will take the children away or hurt the children if he or she is not there to protect them. Well, let me ask you. I know I've seen both sides of that situation when it comes to children. As a matter of fact, I think if I can apply something I felt with regards to my children in this, it wasn't so much that I felt leaving with them would break up their happy home, but I didn't want them to go through anything I had gone through as a teen, being in a shelter, a foster home, anything like that. And I felt that as long as I was not letting them get hit, that as I would work to getting out of there, when I should have just sort of left, period. So it was just a lot. Like, I felt like I'm the one that got stuck here. I'm the one that got stuck here, and it's a bad thing that they have to see it, but I'm not going to put them in the street while I try to, you know, solve it for myself or, you know, get out of the situation or feel better about it, not realizing that it was better to do it the other way. So I can understand that. So let me ask. Let me see. I'm going to go with you, Rod, because you kind of been the second quiet. The second quietest on the panel. Elaine is always the first one. Yeah, you're always the first quiet one. Rod's been sort of second. Yeah, no, you do. You listen deeply. That's why you write so well. Okay, Rod, what's your opinion overall? Do you think that, I want to just ask this question, and don't be offended because I'm not saying this is you, but a lot of people feel that some victims are just stupid and they want to be in it. Do you feel that there's anybody that in that situation that is guilty of that?
Well,
Well, I'm going to say no, because it's like I grew up with a couple of guys who were like controlling, and I watched them browbeat and sometimes hit their girlfriend and listen to their girlfriend talk to the other women.
I think I lost you a little bit, Rod. Could you repeat that?
Hello? Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, can you repeat what you said, honey?
It's like I grew up with a couple of guys who were abusive, and it's like I worked with their girlfriends, and their girlfriends would complain to other women.
Wow.
And I'd say to myself, why did they put up with that? And it's just that they had gotten used to it. And the guys, it's like they felt inadequate. So that's why they more or less were abusive to their girlfriends, because apparently they felt that they didn't measure up to the rest of the guys in the world. So when they met their girlfriends, the slightest thing would cause them to go off, and the girlfriend would feel guilty because they made this otherwise nice guy become an animal. So it's both sides. It's not you just can't say the woman's stupid.
Well, there's male abuse victims too. Just because you know, like I said, the silly code of honor in the male society world, you know, doesn't allow them to say it. It's like a lot of male rape victims. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
They have to suffer this trauma out of some obligation to some stupid testosteronic, you know, imagery that they have to face up to, which makes no sense. But there's girls that have come after their men stabbing them or starting fights, and they're constantly involved with the police and go back to each other, you know, things to that effect. But you're right. So abusers do have a tendency of making the victim feel like somehow them being jerks and jackasses is the victim's fault.
Yeah.
Okay? Deacon, I'm going to pose the same question to you.
Okay. no, there's no time that I think that they're stupid. They're just dealing with being afraid or, you know, like the gentleman said, some of them get used to it. But I can't even understand how can you get used to something that hurts. You know, if somebody is constantly hurting you, how could you condition yourself to get used to being hurt? It just doesn't make sense to me. And it doesn't mean that you're stupid. Not at all. It doesn't mean that you're stupid at all. I don't know. All I can say is that doesn't make you stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Deacon, after I asked Lady Diamond to give her viewpoint, I'm going to try to shed a little clarity on that situation for you, because it is a question that is a very valid one, very much. But I'm going to speak from my experience, and I'm going to speak from what I've seen around me. Okay, and Elaine, I'm going to give you the floor on that. Do you think at any point in time, victims not leaving their abusers is stupid, or you know, like they don't really want to do so?
No, I don't find it stupid at all. They, like I said, they're just scared. It's just fear that they live by. That, you know, they just live by fear. I mean, I guess I don't have that much experience in it, but I mean, I just basically went through just more mental abuse than physical abuse. So, I mean, mental abuse is not as bad as physical abuse, but then it was bad for me. It was bad for me, you know. I was mentally abused more by my daughter's father, always calling me names, you know, threatening me all the time and everything. And, I was in fear that, okay, I mean, and he was constantly putting my mind that no one's going to want me because of my health, because of how I look. I mean, and then little by little, he's like, oh, yeah, you're beautiful. And then he'll bring up again, oh, you know, no one's going to want you because, you know, if you have diabetes, they just leave you, you know, if you get sick, they just leave you anywhere, or they'll hurt you and stuff like that. And, that constant batter in my head, you know, maybe going to the thought of, okay, I'm not going to find someone else. You know, they're just going to use me all the time. And that's what I basically went through. So I can only imagine someone who stays in an abusive relationship is only because of the constant mental blowouts that they get from the abuser themselves. You know, just thinking, oh, my God, if I leave, I'm going to end up with someone just like him. Or I'm going to end up with someone that's worse than him. You know, I might as well stay with him or her than go with someone else that's worse than that person. And I've got through that mental abuse myself until I just said, you know what, bye. Bye. And ended it, goodbye. I was happy, even though to this day he still constantly threatens me over on my chest and everything. He still calls me every minute. I'm like, you know, I ignore him. The only time that I have to talk to him is when it's about my daughter. And then he brings up, oh, well, we're going to get back together. Ain't going to happen. Ain't going to happen. Oh, my dead body ain't going to happen.
Yeah, you do sort of get the burst of courage when you've gotten tired or when you've had enough and figure that, you know what, it's nothing beats fear but fear itself, as they say. So it's like after a while you start going, look, whether I'm nice and sweet, I get hit, or whether I'm loud and boisterous, I get hit. So I might as well go out with a bang. It gets to that point too. Deacon, to answer your question, how does people get used to being hurt? No, it's not that's what happens. Is that part of you believes that you should have saw it coming, so it's your punishment, so you got to deal with what comes with it, and that you're sort of doomed to it. Part of you believes that, you know what, you're going to get better, and whatever you come out with, whether you bruise or scarred up or whatever, eventually you'll be on your own. It's not going to last forever, and you wait in it since you have no other place to go. So many factors get into that, but do we feel that we're used to it? No. It's never that anybody is used to it. It's just that we don't know anything else. We don't know how to get up and go and take the kids and just walk away, and how to really absorb the fact that this person that took all your love and your heart and soul is the monster that's doing the things to you that they're doing. You know, it does take a long time for your mind and your senses and your heart to connect that this person is really the monster that he's showing himself to be or herself to be. That's why a lot of people can't let go of a relationship when someone says it's over, because, like, you can't believe it, especially if it's one of those, what I call the flash endings, where there was no warning, it just happened out of nowhere. Mm. You can't let go. So it's one of those things. But as far as being abusive, you know, dude, a lot of times that person will show their sweet side when they realize they might have gone too far. We don't see in the moment that they're not thinking about the fact that they did this to somebody that they love. We don't understand that they're thinking, oh, my God, if she walks outside with that split in her lip, she could call the cops on me. That's what they're thinking. But we don't see that. We feel that their remorse is coming from the heart when it's really coming from their mind, like, oh, hell, what the hell did I just do? You know, by the way, listeners and victims who are out there, when they say sorry after you've been in the hospital, wrapped up, you know, ribs wrapped up or face bandaged up, stitches, and they cry on your shoulder and they say they wanted you to come home and it'll never happen again, that calm period, you know what they say about the calm before the storm, the darkest before the dawn, all that other stuff, well, You cherish that calm away from him or her, because trust me when I tell you that as soon as that storm comes in, it's going to be a bigger storm than the one you left, and the abuse will escalate, and the violence will get worse, and the bruises will be worse, and the danger imposed to you will be within an inch of your life. It doesn't get better until they want to get better. Because unlike racism, where it's something that's ignorant, they can't control it, just say it. Beating somebody, you can actually take time to go and try to do something different. Something could scare you from the result of you being an abuser to the point that it will scare you straight and say, no, I got to do something different for me. If a person is on drugs and get violent when they're drunk or they're high, but they're normally a sweet person, you know, that's another issue that you have to understand, that regardless to whether or not you could blame the drugs or the substance or the chemicals, in that time, they're still abusers. They're abusing a substance that's eventually causing them to abuse you. I've been there too. And then you feel you can help.
It almost seems like the women who are being abused value the emotional well-being, the feelings of their abuser, more so than themselves.
Yes,
you know,
we do. And you know why?
I feel guilty that he got upset, because maybe if I kept my mouth closed, he wouldn't have choked me until I, blacked out. Maybe if I hadn't said this, he wouldn't have hit me again and made him get angry and watch him show remorse and cry later on, because I know he still loves me, because, see, he's crying. He feels guilty that he hurt me, and I feel guilty that I made him hurt me. And I think those are the kind of thoughts that are probably going in their head as well.
If you heard the words of the poem, that was exactly one of the phrases. And yes, you know why women do? Because women always see the person they love first. They see that past the hitting. They see it past the slices. They see it past the anger. We do. Sometimes women are laying underneath a person with a knife over them and will say that, no, that didn't happen to me, people. I'm just saying I know it has. And we'll still be like, you know, at some point he's going to realize how far he's going and that it's me. It's me that he's doing this to. No, they don't. They don't. You know, you start thinking that maybe if you changed your looks, maybe if you wasn't so fat, maybe if you didn't gain a little weight, maybe if you didn't get too skinny, maybe if you didn't cut your hair, you know, maybe you'll go and do one of those sexual favors that he wanted you to do before outside of the home. You start thinking about a lot of stuff so that you're not the culprit. So that he or she won't think that you know, it's you, or can say it was you that caused anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. But it's not. It just meant that the love wasn't the right type of love in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start looking back, and that's the one thing that, let me just share a little bit about where you will be after it's over, when you leave, if you are blessed enough to hear this and get out of it in time. When you get out of it and you're finally free and you faced that fear of whatever, and you start to see more of what you're capable of doing, because you always knew it was there, but you put it aside to upbuild everyone else. When you get to that point, God is going to open up so much of where the signs were. And you're going to go through another little guilty phase. You're going to look at what your children went through that time, and you're going to go, damn, this happened back then, and I didn't see it. Because you never want to see that. That's not what you're thinking first. You always want to give that person the benefit of the doubt. He's having a bad day today. Or she just found out that her kid's father is dead or something. You always try to give it some sort of excuse. You always do. Because the first time, maybe. The second time, maybe. But there should never be a first time where the reaction comes with a slap or a bruise across to your face. A snapping of words or a mean phrase, yes. But for them to want to physically hit you because they're going through something, that should never, never be an excused action.
Show them the door.
You know, and then now, listen, Rod, I need to say something to you. It sounds like a simple solution. Of course, that would mean everything. Throw out the baby with the bathwater, pretty much. Just go. But it's not that easy. Experts will tell you. The victims can tell you. It's not that easy. You don't know. First of all, the ones that are abusive, when they know their victim is still in the house, they get comfortable. But when they start seeing that you are dead serious about leaving, there's a whole different side of evil or darkness that comes out of that abuser. When you've been somebody that took their crap all that time and still tried to make it work and stood by them and forgave them, the day that they lose that, they go bananas. Lady Di,
mm-hmm.
you sort of understand what I mean by that, right?
Yeah, I do.
They go bananas. Because now you're not that perfect. You're not that what do you call that? That foundational cement block that can't be moved anymore. That no matter what you do, you can throw things against it, it will never chip or crack. That you're not that in their life anymore. Now you mean business. You're getting ready to get up and go. I don't know if any of you seen the horror movie 100 Feet, but if you haven't, if you haven't seen it, it stars the girl that used to be one of the X-Men in the X-Men movie, Famke Jensen, I think her name is, Jensen or something like that, Famson Jensen or something like that. Anyway,
okay.
You need to look at that movie. That movie was about a cop's wife that was getting beaten practically to death, and his cop buddies, as many times as she reported the domestic abuse, okay, the boys in blue, they, you know, that's their partner, code of honor. You don't snitch on your partner. You don't do anything. She filed over 9 different domestic violence reports that when this man came home from the job, he started drinking and beating her, drinking and beating her. She killed him in self-defense, went to jail, got convicted, and had to come home with a house arrest bracelet. She couldn't leave her house past 100 feet radius, okay? Well, her husband's ghost was in there, vindictive, and was beating her up because she killed him, and she was ready to leave, and she started trying to get rid of all his earthly possessions to clean her house of his spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But it was to the point where it happened because she was tired of being abused. And the day she told him that she was going to leave was when he took a knife and tried to kill her, and that's the reason why she shot him to death. But this happens all the time. There's a big reason why a lot of these women and men stay in these abusive relationships, because cops turn around and say, okay, well, if it happens again, okay, you know what? Y'all need to take care of it. I personally had called on my ex and had them come to the house. They saw the bruises. They saw certain things be ripped. They saw scratches. And I heard them turn to their partner when they took him into the kitchen and me into the living room to get our stories. They came back together in the center of our house and whispered to each other, this is a domestic violence situation. Let them go to family court. Let these niggas take care of their own problems. And when they left, I was left with the abuser. When they left, we were left to deal with each other. This is the type of situation, because domestic violence or domestic abuse is not taken very seriously. It's almost like you walking up to somebody and saying that you have AIDS. Even if you're a medical professional, they look at you and they'll treat you with funny attitudes, even if it's as much as they know all about it. So it's like that. It's like you're a pariah or you have this label on you. And I'm not saying it is that there aren't agencies out there that are true to form, because Safe Horizons is a great agency. Catholic Charities, who connected with them, is a great agency. The problem is the steps to actually connecting with them. That is the problem, because once you can get to them, you're wonderfully protected.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one agency, or that's one field that I will never be able to have. Like, you know, we had all these segments about corrupt cops or bad servicing or anything. These are not the charities that do that. These people actually help. When they're out there looking for funds and donations, they're actually putting it back out to people. They're actually helping. They're in the courtrooms with them. They have a little, in all the courtrooms, in every court building, there's a Safe Horizon room where the woman or the man doesn't have to go face their abuser on the stand. The hearing could go on without them while they're waiting in the room. They can get served in the room. They don't have to be in the same room with them. And these people sit right there and advocate with you.
Mm-hmm.
So these are legitimate people. The problem is many of these victims don't get there. And Lord knows the teens are becoming worse with it. Because their immaturity tells them that, oh, if I tell my mother and father that this man hit me, then my mother and father will forbid me from seeing him. Duh, you think? You know, so that's what they're thinking. Oh, maybe it's me. You see, no. Oh, and I love not to hear these girls thinking it's cute where they go, oh, no, he's so jealous.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even look like that. You know what will happen. It's not cute, ladies.
No,
it's not cute, gentlemen. It's not cute.
Yes,
being jealous is not. It's not cute for them to tell you that you can't wear the same things that you wore that attracted them to you. It's not. That's a very, 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 very big sign for you to take heed to and run like hell in the opposite direction.
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to come back. I have one final break to take. I'm going to come back. There is another side that I would like to share. And I want to give some of you that are listening out there some numbers to call if you're in a situation and you need some help. And I will try my best to make sure that before this broadcast is over or as soon as it is, that the links will be up on our website so that you can call if you need any help. So as it stands, what I'm going to do right now is I want to play Runaway Love with Luda and Mary J. Blige, because this is something all of you need to hear about different situations that go on with us, abusive and otherwise. So please, hang out with me for 4.5 minutes. Be right back.
Yeah, and it go a little something
like that.
Years old. She's trying to figure out why the world is so cold. Why she's all alone and they never met her family. Mama's always gone and she never met her daddy. Part of her is missing and nobody'll listen. Mama's on drugs, getting high up in the kitchen. Bringing home in at different hours of the night. Starting with some laughs, usually ending in a fight. Sneaking in a room when her mama's knocked out. Trying to have his way and little Lisa says ouch. She tries to resist but then all he does is beat her. Tries to tell her mom but her mama don't believe her. Lisa stuck up in the world on her own. Forced to think that hell is a place called home. Nothing else to do but get some clothes and pack. She said she's about to run away and never come back.
Like this.
She said he's trying to figure why the world is so cold. Why she's not pretty and nobody seems to like her. Alcoholic stepdad always wanna strike her. Yells and abuses, leaves her with some bruises. Teachers ask questions, he's making up excuses. Bleeding on the inside, crying on the eyes. It's only one girl really knows what she's about. Her name is Little Stacy and they become friends. Promise that they'll always be tight till the end. Until one day Little Stacy gets shot. A drive-by bullet went straight up on a block. Now Nicole's stuck up in the world on her own. Forced to think that hell is a place called home. Nothing else to do but get her clothes and pack. She says she's about to run away and never come back. Old. She said he's trying to figure why the world is so cold. So she pops X to get rid of all the pain. Plus he's having sex with a boy who's 16. Emotions run deep and she thinks she's in love. So there's no protection, he's using no glove. Never thinking about the consequences of her actions. Living for today and not tomorrow's satisfaction. The days go by and her belly gets big. The father bails out, he ain't ready for a kid. Knowing her mama will blow it all out of proportion. Plus she lives poor, so no money for abortion. Erica is stuck up in the world on her own. Forced to think that hell is a place called home. Nothing else to do but get her clothes and pack. She says she's about to run away and never come back.
Run away, I can only imagine what you're going through, ladies. Sometimes I feel like running away myself. So do me a favor right now and close your eyes and picture us running away together. When we come back, everything's gonna be okay. Open your eyes.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends, everybody. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. That was Mary J. Blige and Ludacris with Runaway Love. And I always play that during these type of segments because the three examples that he used in there, you know, is very close to the pain and suffrages that we go through now. So let me bring our panelists back in, and what I would like to do is hear from them once again. Now there is, ladies and gentlemen, let me start with you, Rod. Are you back?
I'm back.
I'm back.
Deegan? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Those of you that are out there listening, safehorizon.org is the headquarter website for all the branches across the U.S. for domestic violence victims. They help you just start a new life and move on from it, from counseling to family counseling to shelters to assistance with housing to assistance with clothing, anything you need that they will help support you just leaving it all behind. And I think the only thing you really have to worry about is making sure that you have yours and your children's legal documents, such as their birth certificates, social security cards, any medical IDs, whatever the case is, those type of things you need to bring along with you. But they really are just there to help you. If you're in one of those situations where you just have to drop it all off and just go, they're definitely the perfect people for you. There will be a few more.
Relocate you? Is that it?
Well, they'll at least be able to help them get to legal stuff if relocation is needed. I believe that they do, but I haven't been in it, but I do know what they do, and that they're very deep into it. They work with the police, they work with community agencies, and I know that they have been the biggest name that's been referred to almost everybody that's been a victim of domestic violence. So that's one. Those of you involved with rape, because you know what a lot of people don't understand is that even spouses can rape. And, you know, they laugh at that because they feel that, oh, yeah, right, like that's community property type thing. When you're being held down in the middle of a fight or that's being used for humiliation purposes or for hurtful purposes or for them to show you who's boss, that type of thing, and you're constantly saying no, that means I'm not for it right now and it's rape.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the fact that it can't be prosecuted the same way, you know, is a different story. But that's a form of abuse as well, where you can't say no, where, you know, you choose to walk away and go into another room and say, you know what, that's fine, I'm here till I can't be here anymore. And that person feels like, well, I don't care how bad I said you look, you know, like you're a piece, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you go through that in abuse as well. And it's another way of the abusers having control over you. So once again, everybody, safehorizon.org is the best place to go to get any information to whatever your particular situational type is. Because, you know, you have the ones that are workable. You know, you can fix them in a way. They'll listen, or really losing their family is something that really bothers them and they want to make a change. You have the others that are just obsessive compulsive. You have those that are chronic, you know, so you have those that just don't want to hear it until somebody gives them a taste of their own medicine, which is another thing. I think that true abusers really need to have steeper sentences. What do you think of that, panelist?
What sentences? Say that again.
I think that true chronic domestic abusers need to have steeper sentences, stricter, harder sentences, because they're letting these guys sit in jail for a night, or these women sit in jail for a night, go to court, get arraigned. All right, you two stay away from each other, play nice, go ahead. Here's your paper, keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not staying in. The only time I think that I've seen people stay in jail for a long time is if their court dates fell on a holiday or a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they find them.
If there's some substantial physical damage done by the other individual, let's say maybe a month, 2 months, 3 months, if let's say you got some ribs broken, broken arm, broken leg, dislocated jaw, or even longer.
I think that unless they had actual like knife or guns involved,
mm-hmm.
okay, where somebody actually got shot or stabbed to a point, then it becomes a different charge. Like it's not
mm-hmm.
just domestic violence; it's like assault with a deadly weapon, or it becomes attempted murder. Then it becomes a different thing. Now this is what gets me. There's a woman we talked about this story yesterday, and I believe it was Florida as well. The one that shot the warning shots into the air.
Oh, yeah. She's
running.
Doing like 20 years. They
right.
gave her another trial, I think.
Right. Another trial.
Mm-hmm.
Where what the hell was...
She shouldn't even have to be in trial for it.
Mm-hmm.
Or should have been in jail at all. They were sentencing
right.
her 20 years to life. Are you kidding me?
Right.
For shooting in the air to stop an attack on her own life. This woman had a baby 1 week before that. Just
mm-hmm.
had a baby. So what the hell exactly do domestic violence victims do? Like I said, between the time that it takes for them to actually get out of their situation and actually make it to the safe havens, there may not be much that they can do. If they already they can show up bruised, beaten up, and with half their body parts gone. I mean, what if you can't go to the law enforcement agencies to hear the situation, then where the hell do you go? And if it's illegal to shoot somebody or kill somebody, but it's not illegal to stand your ground and it's not illegal to defend your life, then what the hell, where's the line? Exactly what is it?
You know what, Katie?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm an equal opportunity person. You know, and it doesn't matter to me, male or female, if you're in a domestic violence situation, and just because of what I went through with my family and situations that's happening with my family as far as abuse, I would give, it wouldn't make no difference, man or woman, if they have been charged with domestic violence or basically violence, period, mandatory year in jail.
Yeah. Hopefully
that's only the beginning of it. If you have a history of domestic violence, it would start. You automatically gonna get a year anyway, especially if you're a known domestic violent person.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I would cap something. I would top it off. Top the icing off on the cake with some more time on top of that.
And I also believe
a couple strikes first, and then it's a year.
Right.
Mandatory incarceration.
I believe that, especially in light of the story that you shared, Deacon, and in light of things that I have seen happen and people that have been, I mean, listen, movies were done from two famous cases, as I said before. There was, what was her name, Fran? The one that was the story about the Burning Bed movie was about her. And then the Tracy Thurman story. That woman is disabled for life now. And this man stabbed her in front of cops, neighbors, and the damn neighborhood. The cops said, he's having fun with it. I mean, I still can't even look at that movie on TV, knowing what I watch it, though, but I can't sit through it without going bananas. Because
mm-hmm.
The cops were there, and he was shoving cops off and still stabbing her. Stepped on her
mm-hmm.
neck, stepped on her spine,
wow.
stabbed her again, stepped on her spine, stabbed her again. They got guns pointing. Not one
well,
officer discharged their weapon. That's what I'm saying to you, sir. Not one of them stopped this man. She had over 52 stab wounds, not to talk about the injuries. Deacon, it's a Lifetime movie, but it can probably be seen on any movie site. The Tracy Thurman story.
I remember watching that movie, and that movie was crazy. Yeah, I think it
goes
a part of the
cops. And she was trying to leave him. Everywhere she went, he threatened the people that kept her. And then other people going, oh, just go talk to him, Tracy. You know, and you had those little hick moms. Oh, now you know that he didn't really mean to do that. You know he loves you. How the hell is he loving me and beating me to death?
Exactly.
So, okay, remember in the burning bed, he beat her because she made frozen dinners. He says, another TV dinner? Bam, I don't even want to smell them.
Uh-huh.
And he did this in front of the kids. And meanwhile, every time she was running off and everything to go hide, his mother found out where she was and convinced her to come back, making it seem like that's what men do.
Mm.
Men go through that. And if you're a good, supportive wife, you have to go through this. No, the hell we don't. God didn't say to Adam, you can beat Eve when she gets on your nerves, even after they ate from the tree. He didn't say, well, now that she sinned, guess what? You're allowed to beat up your wife. Well, I don't know where they got it from, but it's becoming a horrible epidemic. The same way cops shooting unarmed black men, I mean, what else is going to happen? Cops are turning their head, but now at the same time, you know what I believe? I believe that the way that they make registered rapists be registered sex offenders, after one or two times that a person has been brought in for domestic violence, they should be registered in some national registry. Maybe it'll help the dating world. Maybe we'll have the dating world.
To guys, let's say the guy's a habitual offender. I mean, what do they do besides, okay, let him cool off overnight? I mean, is there additional counseling for him or what?
Yeah, they have mandatory anger management classes. Is anger management, what are they going to do? Teach you, wait, when you start to feel yourself get upset, look at the little blue light, okay? And then he'll probably look at the little blue light and go, you know what? She used to wear blue earrings that flash just like that. Bam.
They give him something else to break, something else to focus on.
You know, that would be nice if they would stop treating domestic violence as a private matter. That's the one time when government should be involved.
Yeah. But then that's the thing, Katie. I mean, before domestic violence, when the police were going to the house, they'll ask the male or female to take a walk. And then, you know, they'll cool off, you know, one side of the story, and the other side of the story. And depending on whatever the situation is, they'll either make an arrest or, you know, just tell the person, like I said, take a walk. Now, the police don't get involved. They don't get involved. They don't want any involvement in that. They send it straight to the court system to figure out, how, you know, to go through the domestic violence thing. The police don't want anything to do with it. They look the other way. They do make an arrest, but once they make the arrest, they give it straight to the court. They don't want anything to do with it from there on out.
And see, that's another problem.
Can they keep them away from you and the kids? I mean,
no, they don't even do that anymore.
Can they keep you away from it? Those are my kids. I mean, he's still kicking mommy ass. But I mean, can you keep him away from mommy and his kids?
Yes, they can do that. They can do that. But you know what? Usually I think that if they show up and something looks like blatantly out of place, like if they're severe, then they'll act, but they'll act more on a criminal, like on a criminal way of thinking, you know, where they're taking a criminal in. They don't do it as a crime of domestic violence. It's more like it's a crime of assault. Some cops, and I will say that there was one police officer, and if I could I don't remember his name, but he was the one person I think that shocked me, like he was stood above, because he actually turned to my ex and said, you're a man. And regardless of how mad she gets you, if that's what it is, well, take a walk outside. Don't you have your little boys in this house? And he says, if you that mad with her, then, you know, you leave. And you still be, at least you'll leave a man. But There was another time that same cop had to come back, and he saw certain bruises on my face. He took him out for me, even though at that time something else was going on, and I didn't want to say yes or no to pressing charges at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, oh, really? Yeah, you're coming with me. So there are still a few good men out there with, as far as the cops go. I don't want to keep on putting the mm-hmm. wet blanket, I should say, on over the whole force, because it's yeah. just that the horrors of the latest craze with the police force is putting those other good guys in the shadows, and it's not
mm-hmm.
fair. But I'll say this. I think that they need to start taking domestic violence now as a higher crime rate priority. There is a problem with teens that are being stabbed to death and shot to death in their cars and in front of their homes by young kids. There's a problem when grown-ass men and women don't know how to sit there and have a conversation or walk the hell out if the problem got that bad. That people are dying and your kids are watching you kill one parent or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Or that your son has to grow up thinking that that's the way to treat a woman, or your daughter has to believe that that's the way a man should treat her.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot more damage than just the physical, people, and y'all need to understand this. And for those of you sitting around looking from your little tinted view on the outside of a very, very tinted window, looking in, you don't know the situation. You don't know what happened. You don't know how the strongest of people can be trapped in a situation
mm-hmm.
when there's no hope. I literally took my first three oldest children and their father. I ran like hell with the baby, postpartum, two other little toddlers, and ran. Hid in someone's attic. The only one person that didn't care about him coming there screaming and yelling and threatening. It wasn't until the baby started to cry from the attic that he knew something was up, and he tried to barge his way in there and literally drag us out by our hands, feet, and luggage. I remember being dragged down a flight of stairs in front of my neighbors and everything. Cops came, stood right out there on Atlantic Avenue, and was busy asking him, are you sure you're not crazy? No, he just dragged me down four flights of steps in front of you, holding me down, pulling my shirt off in the whole night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was my
it's
first...
Mm-hmm.
Did nothing.
What, they were like, he's just letting off a little steam?
They were too busy trying to figure out why he was acting crazy, and I knew it was an act because he felt that if these white cops saw a crazy black man, they might back off and think he was just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Then he started to know that I also knew they might shoot him, so he felt that he would drag my sympathy that way. And he took my keys to my apartment, made copies, and came back in one day when I was at work. So it was like mm-hmm. a whole lot of stuff. This man stalked me for months.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was my first. And I was with him for 6 years. 5 years after that relationship ended, I got into my last one. And 16
mm-hmm.
years of him being a different type of abuser. So it was just... back pickings on both ends, I guess. Sometimes victims tend to repeat the choices and not realize they're making the same choice.
Because mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. the window dressing looks different. But the things that you can go through, the mind control that can happen, you could be the smartest, most outspoken person, and somehow, some way, you wind up finding out that you've just been a pawn in someone's game.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize you're trapped and you're on the inside looking out to the world, and the world is saying, kiss my behind and walk the other way. The
mm.
cops are telling you it's a matter for family court and let a man do his job with his wife. There's people out there that are looking at you going, why don't you just leave? When you're sitting up there and they say, okay, fine, can I come stay with you? Well, no, So everybody's a backseat driver and nobody has a license.
Mm-hmm. Because the law don't have any real teeth in it to keep them away from you, right? It's like you're a family.
Yeah.
Work it out.
Exactly.
Instead of we gotta keep you guys apart. You gotta leave the city, leave the state, that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, I need you now to give us your last final words because we're down to 5 minutes left. We're down to 5 minutes left, and I want to hear from my panelists. Deacon, I'll start with you.
Well, I think I've said all what needs to be said to the people I did and maybe listening. Just get out the relationship because it's real. It's not a relationship. It's a death sentence.
Great. Thank you very much for that, and thank you for sharing your story, Deacon, because I think hopefully that reached somebody. Okay, and you, sir, Rod?
That definitely, I echo his words. Definitely get out the relationship. And it'd be nice if the state, the federal government, had passed laws which would, you know, put more teeth into it and they step in. But it's so much easier if we could, you know, look at the both individuals and somehow come to an understanding, you know, redirect that anger instead of pulverizing the woman. And, you know, give them some wood. Let them take up a woodman or something.
Thank you, sir.
You know, that kind of stuff.
And it's not just women. There's a lot of men going through this too. Good guys with vindictive, loudmouth, boisterous, and violent women. You too. Mm-hmm. You too. You don't let your sons or daughters think that that's the way a woman should treat a man. You don't do that. And I don't care about this sexism crap. This crap about men having to bang on their chest and subdue and, you know, endure any situation. That's nonsense. It doesn't make you any less of a man for showing that you got feelings and you need help. It doesn't. And stop putting that in people's head. That's old-timers crap. Now, listen, I want to listen to what Elaine has to say as our final words. Lady Di?
Yes. You're in an abusive relationship. There is always a way out. There's always a way out. Either I hate to say it like this, but either you run and hide and get out and you disappear out of the spectrum, which most of the time it works. Go to your friends and family and get their help. Or you have to go home and just turn around and say, that's it, it's done. Let's, you know, we have to finalize it. Or do a Tina Turner on your partner. And that's the only way you could turn the whole thing around and whoop and get out of your abusive relationship. Then do it. You know, don't say something and think you're stuck. You're not stuck. You know, you have legs to move, you have arms to move, you have your mind to move, and you have to get out. If you have to get out of the relationship, get out as fast as you can. Don't stay stuck.
Thank you very much. And my final thoughts on the situation, echoing all that my panelists have had to say, if it's bad when you left crying, the remorse, it's not going to be a genuine one until that person wants to change for themselves. If you go back, you won't make it out. And I will tell you that if it hurts, it's not love. If it's miserable, it's not love. If it's condescending to you, it's not love. If you have to alter yourself, change yourself, be somebody totally different than who you are, or compromise or improvise to a point where you're doing the only one doing the improvising, it's not love. Get the hell out. Run like hell. Don't stay. Don't look back. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Keep it moving. Okay? Until tomorrow night, everybody, be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. Shout out to everybody out there that has brought us up to 13,598 listeners. Thank you guys very much for the support, for the feedback, to the Real World Black News and Discussions group, to my Facebook people, Dolores Milligan, to all of you others that have been making a valiant effort to stick through this and keep this mission going. Thank you very much. And we will be announcing a new segment coming up very soon in which Lady Di will be more actively and exclusively involved with. But stay tuned for that announcement. In the meantime, please visit our website at katielissa.wix.com/on the edge with hyphens so that you can get links to our safe havens for your domestic violence situations and also on our Facebook page at On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and Friends on Facebook. Thanks, okay, see
On the Edge. Real talk about real issues.